Hello, welcome back to the latest edition of the Strong Outside Podcast. Nico Kramer joined the wonderful two co-hosts, Mattia and Spencer. There's a lot to get into, so I'm going to skip how they're doing. They're doing fine, I'm sure, probably. And I think we might as well just start off in an unusual spot, which is France. We usually don't give a lot of time to France or start with them, but there's been a lot of news off the pitch coming from Ligue 1 regarding Marseille and their fan base. Their fans attacked Marseille's fans. Attacked the training ground. They got into where the players train. They actually hit a few players, including one, Alvaro Gonzalez, on their center backs on the head with a how do you say it? Like a smoke, you know, like smoke.
Yeah, flare. Smoke grenade.
Flare, yeah. They hit him in the head, destroyed a few cars. They set some stuff on fire. So it got really violent. And they're, you know, the fans are really unhappy with the recent performances. They don't like the owner. It's a new owner, an American owner.
Classic.
I mean, you know, Mattia, I know you like to watch Ligue 1. I mean, Marseille aren't that good right now. They just lost to PSG, I think, a few days ago, just to top it all off.
Yeah.
I mean, what is this, you know, you think their argument is, well, it's the fans. It's our club. You know, owners come and go, coaches come and go, players come and go, but the fans always stay. Is that the right thinking, or this is really going to do nothing but cause more damage?
So I think definitely the performances in the last couple of weeks for Marseille really haven't been top at all. They are two games back on everybody else in the league, so saying that they're ninth in the league doesn't really serve as an argument here. But I think definitely in a city like Marseille, especially with a club like Marseille, the fans, we all know they have some of the most passionate fans in the whole world, basically. I think it does. I think that's a right mindset to take, and that stands for a lot of clubs where the fans have been there for hundreds of years. Ownership, as you say, can come and go. Coaches come and go, and actually, the Marseille coach got fired. There's rumors of like Sarri maybe taking that job, but who knows? But I think, yeah, they have a point, and I think it's not justified to storm into the training ground, especially in a global pandemic like the one that we have here, and hitting players, as you said, Nico. But there's definitely a problem at the club, and it needs to be addressed sooner or later, because this is not the Marseille that we're used to seeing. Especially, I mean, this year hasn't really been great, really successful for them, seeing as they didn't. How many points did they manage to get in the Champions League group? Like one,
yeah,
or zero?
Yeah.
So it really hasn't been a memorable season at all for them.
Yeah, and Spencer, what do you say to the argument that, you know, it's a fans club and not the owned by the players, coaches, owners, whatever?
I mean, they do have a valid point, because the fans have been there for longer than any of the players, and they'll be there long after the players are retired.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as people always say, football is nothing without the fans. So if you lose the fans, there's not really a point in having a football club. And I think everyone can agree that a club is at its best when there's a bit of unity between the players, the
Definitely.
Coaches and the owners,
mm-hmm.
and the fans, of course. And if you don't have that, you'll never be able to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's fans, this is never really the right way to act. I think you can definitely protest, nothing wrong with that. But when you get violent and when you're putting, yeah, you know, people's lives
at risk,
there's a
certain line you can't cross.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think this is, in the long run, I don't think this is going to be helpful. And as you say, I mean, they're not doing too well this season. You know, the owner's not going to sell, especially on top of that, when you have fans like this, the value of the club, you know, it's harder to sell if you ever decide to sell. So mm-hmm. I just think as a whole, it makes it a lot harder. But, I mean, towards the top of the table, it is actually quite an interesting race, really, between three mm-hmm. clubs. Monaco is right behind, to be fair. Only 3 points from PSG, who are in third. Lille do have a three-point gap, though, over PSG and 2 points over Lyon. I mean, Mathieu, are you ready to call it a race, or still PSG on the long run just going to come right back?
So last week, or last podcast, I remember we talked about the same thing. And wrongfully, I said that PSG is going to run away with it like they always do. But I think Lille and Lyon both can both really, like, make a run for it, especially because they've had such an impressive season. Both those teams only losing twice in the throughout the season, and Lyon actually beat PSG earlier in the season 1-0. So I think it's definitely going to be interesting to see the return games of Lyon PSG and Lille PSG. It's definitely going to be between those three. I don't see Monaco. I don't see Monaco going at them in the long run, but I think Lille and Lyon, especially Lille, can make a run for it. And it's impressive to see Lyon here because they recently sold their main striker, Moussa Dembélé, to Atleti. So it's impressive to see them holding up the race so far down in the season.
Yeah, I mean, Spencer, is there a race or not
Yeah,
so
I
much?
mean, there's definitely a race. I mean, Lyon, and PSG are in great form. Even Monaco, I believe, have won six straight Ligue 1 games, which is very impressive, and they're only 3 points back of PSG. So, I mean, I think a lot of it could come down to the head-to-heads between Lyon, PSG, Lille, PSG, and Lyon, Lille. But I think there's definitely a title race, and it's arguably the second most exciting of the top five leagues at the moment.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's kind of funny that, Serie A and League One and are the two teams or the two leagues I'd say with the biggest race as of right now. And
Really,
Premier,
the only leagues with a
yeah, that's
race.
true. Yeah, it's kind of an awkward flip, but it's good to see. I mean, it's a nice rotation, I guess. And we'll shift over to the Premier League, I guess, right now since we're on that. There's been a lot of big games, a lot of awkward games, I'd say. Most recently, of course, the biggest one was Man City beating Liverpool in Liverpool 4-1. Spencer, what was your reaction during the game? I mean, is this all on Alisson, or was it more than that?
I wouldn't say it's all on Alisson, but I definitely think his two mistakes turned the tide of the game. I mean, at the time of the second goal, it was Liverpool had just evened it up. They had a bit of momentum. They just made two somewhat attacking substitutions, but after that, they just completely crumbled, and Man City, you have to say, deserved to win that game, and they did.
I
Yeah, I
think
mean, Tia is the league
especially
over.
I was surprised by the fact, like the beginning of the game, if for anybody who watched the game, in my opinion, was I think Liverpool was very much in the game, and I was even looking at them to win. Like I thought they were gonna win like the first 20 minutes up until the penalty on that Gundogan missed. I think that was a big turning point. And then from then on, it was Man City domination. Two things we need to point out here is, well, we already kind of covered it privately, guys, but publicly, I mean, we have to talk about the Salah penalty on top of Foden's performance. I think Phil Foden is always put in the same group as like the Mason Greenwoods of the world, the Sakas of the world, but I think he's really, really next level, and I think he belongs in the conversation with Haaland and João Felix and Jadon Sancho because he's really that good, and he showed it against Liverpool. And it'll be interesting to see how Southgate, if he, the Southgate decides to call him up, I think he will, and how he'll play him in the Euros this summer. And I mean, Salah's penalty, I think the internet kind of decided what the right call was right after the game, right after the call, and I think it was a missed call by who was the ref? Oliver something? Mark Oliver or
Michael
something?
Oliver.
Michael Oliver.
I mean,
Go ahead.
personally, he did go down easily, but from Salah's point of view, if he doesn't go down, there's no way he gets a penalty. And there was some contact, definitely not enough to bring him down, but there was an arm on his shoulder. He did get pulled back. And if I'm Salah, every time, without really any chance ahead of me, since I believe it was John Stones coming to cover Ruben Diaz. So I'd go down 10 times out of 10, and he got the call, so I can't blame him. What I do think it was a dive, but you have to say you can't really
it's
blame
in a
Salah for
footballer's
going
nature.
down. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. For me, it's a frustrating call because I agree with you that there is contact and that should probably end the debate over it. But it is frustrating that, you know, and it's not just Salah, it's, you know, Suarez and basically every player now, low contact like that, and they're going to go down. And I mean, I suppose, yeah, I guess you had to give it a penalty. But it is a little bit frustrating. I think you're setting a standard for around the league that little contact like that, you can go down, you'll get it. Yeah, and then it changed the game. If that had been a game-changing penalty, then for sure, I think there would have been a lot more talk about it. But since Man City got, you know, three-goal win, it doesn't really matter in the long run. But I'm agreeing with you, Mattia. In the first half, I thought Liverpool were really dominant. City, you know, they don't have a main striker. Foden was playing a striker. He's not really a striker. He did well, though, as you said. And I thought, well, this is just going to be a counter-attacking game. And once it got more comfortable into it, yeah, I mean, it started to show. I mean, especially that – I don't know how many times I saw it, but Sterling on Trent Alexander-Arnold down that side of the field, it was just the main target for City in the attack. It was working nearly every time. Sterling had a really good game down that side. And it's frustrating because I think Liverpool right now, you know, they're not scoring a lot of goals. I thought they could have had a few more chances. And, of course, you know, I thought they were still in the game. And then Alisson – those two mistakes within, you know, what was it, like 5 minutes? 5 minutes
yeah,
of each
yeah.
other. That's just really unlucky. I think Liverpool have been really unlucky this season with injuries and other problems. And I think that's just kind of tops it off. It's just really unlucky.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can shift over to Chelsea now. Talking about the Premier League, Chelsea, who since the hiring of Thomas Tuchel as their new coach, have gone undefeated. They've conceded one goal in four games, which was against Sheffield United this past weekend. But they still managed to win. Yeah, a pretty funny own goal. Guys, especially after the win against Tottenham, which I, in my opinion, didn't really shock anything or reveal anything new about Chelsea, because it wasn't really a triumphant win, to say the least. But is this beginner's luck or... is this actually a culture change at Chelsea?
I think it's definitely. I think you have to look at the teams they've played. They've played Sheffield United, who are one of the worst attacking sides
they beat
in
Man U.
history.
Oh, come on.
They played a Harry Kane-less, Mourinho-led Tottenham. They played Wolverhampton, who have been without their best striker and have struggled for goals all season. And they've played Burnley. So those aren't really teams that you think would score a lot of goals. Granted, they have played well. They haven't let up much. But they were also very fortunate to get away with a win versus Sheffield. They had a very questionable penalty. And Sheffield nearly leveled it at the end. But they have been getting results. Whether these performances would have worked against some of the better sides in the Premier League, I don't know. But I definitely think the quality of the opposition has to be looked at.
No, I think Spencer got it right, straight on. I mean, for me, they have looked impressive. I do think there is a culture change happening, yes, as I would expect it there to be. Mason Mount, by the way, who, you know, whether you're not a jokes about him, but I think he's been playing really well. I really do. I think he's earned his spot that he has currently. But yeah, it's right. You know, Wolves and Burnley, and by the way, Tottenham, and we'll get to Tottenham in a minute, but that was a very frustrating game to watch, I'd say, if I was a Tottenham fan. In Sheffield. But the next stretch coming up after they play Newcastle, they have Southampton, Atletico Madrid, Man U, Everton, Leeds, Atletico Madrid again, and then Liverpool. So that's where I'm going to really be interested in seeing where has there been improvement, has there been growth. And it's early. I'm not saying if they do badly, you sack Thomas Tuchel. No.
No.
But that's where I'm really interested in seeing if there has been a real improvement.
Yeah.
And you know, or not. And, of course, yeah. Go.
Just one more question regarding Chelsea. Tuchel has seen – I mean, he started Marcus Alonso. He's been giving Marcus Alonso a lot of playing time, because obviously he likes his attacking style. starting him over Chilwell. Not the last game, but he's been starting Marcus Alonso over the big signing that Chilwell was this summer. And he's been starting Jorginho, who the Chelsea fan base haven't been very fond of lately, but Jorginho's been delivering, scoring the penalties he needs to score. What do you guys think about these two players? And Rudiger, honestly, breaking into the starting lineup once again.
I mean, I think that since he's going three at the back, I think that definitely suits Marcus Alonso a lot better than a typical left back position, because it gives him so much more license to go forward. Mm-hmm. And going forward is definitely the better part of his game than actually defending. So I definitely think that that system suits him more. And Jorginho, I mean, he's been playing well. Him and Kovacic seem to have a good midfield partnership. It is sad, though, that means Conte isn't really getting into the games, who was, of mm-hmm. course, one of the best midfielders, if not the best midfielder in the world just a couple years ago. But, I mean, if the results keep coming, it's hard to fault him for his choices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, on top of that, one other player that's come back under Tuchel is Azpilicueta, who he's playing on their right-sided center-back role. Of course, he's their captain, and I always thought he should have always been in that team, even under Lampard. I know Lampard preferred Reece James over him, but he's a really good leader, he's a really good player, and I'm really happy to see him back in the squad. And I think Spencer's right again that Marcus Alonso, for me, is such an interesting player because he's a really good attacker, really good finisher. On top of that, and as with three in the back, if he's able to play left wing back, left mid, those higher up positions, I think he's a really dangerous threat. For counter attacking, for set pieces as well. I mean, so I think he's definitely going to be a key part. I've always liked him as a player. I'm happy to see him back. And if you're going to play that three in the back, then I definitely think he's your man over Chilwell. He just gives you a little bit more of that attacking presence.
Definitely.
For sure. So, yeah, I mean, for those two guys, it's great to see back. And along with Rudiger as well, who I also thought should have been playing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be a really dangerous back line to have. But yeah. I'd like to shift over to Tottenham, who's sitting in eighth place right now. And I got to be honest with you, I'm starting to get pretty frustrated with Tottenham because, just a while ago, we were debating if they're contenders.
They were top of the
league. I
wasn't
so sure on it. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't so sure on it. I know you guys were a little bit more hopeful on it. But, there's a way you can play counterattacking football. There's, like Atletico Madrid. You can play that way, and they get results, though. But Tottenham, I don't think this team, like their personnel, is built for this Atletico Madrid style counterattack, defend, defend, defend. And I saw that against Chelsea. I mean, they were just dominated by Chelsea. And I just saw no change in tactics, no attacking presence. When you have a guy like Son and you're playing him on the counterattack, I think it's almost a waste of talent. I mean, Spencer, what do you think about this current Tottenham side?
I mean, I think the Chelsea game, I think it was hard because they were missing Harry Kane, who was by far their best player along with Son. But, I mean, when you look at the formation, what even is
it's really
this?
Weird.
I don't know.
And Dembele like flying up the flank.
It's like
on
four,
the left wing.
It's four in the back and then three people stacked on each side.
Yeah.
It's a very weird formation that I haven't seen before. And it just flat out didn't work. They got utterly dominated by Chelsea and were lucky it was only 1-0 at the end. But they did get a good win versus West Brom with Harry Kane back. This weekend they have a very, very tough game against Man City, who recently Tottenham have been able to get results against. They've beat them earlier this season. They beat them last season. So if they are able to pull off a result, then maybe our criticism will be a little early. But, I mean, still, they're arguably one of the worst teams to watch in football. It's just not entertaining whatsoever to watch them play.
Right, and I want to touch real quick, you know, regarding Tottenham, regarding someone who is on the bench much more often than I think anyone would have imagined, Gareth Bale, who, I mean, let's just be honest with ourselves. When you have Eric Lamella and Lucas Moura coming on over Gareth Bale, I mean, Spencer, just, you know, simply, was it done right? And that this guy, does he have any value left? Because that doesn't seem like Mourinho has a lot of confidence in him bringing those two guys over, who was supposedly one of the better players in the world just a few years ago.
I mean, he's just not that good. Like, when he plays, it's not like he sets the world alight. I mean,
yeah.
There's a reason that Eric Lamela's getting over him. Dane Scarlett
he played well against Marine.
Ahead of him. I mean,
you got to give him props.
Like, there's not much to say about Bale.
That's really like it. Players like Bale, I think Tottenham is kind of filled with players like that are honestly overhyped. Like, they made signings, Doherty, Højbjerg this summer that honestly, like Højbjerg, of course, he's known. He's been good. He's known for his fighting mentality. But like Doherty isn't getting minutes. He was pretty decent on Wolves. But like as Spencer said, the lineup that he's putting out is just ridiculous, and they just don't have, especially with Harry Kane out, they don't have enough quality to justify them being in a title race. Like Aurier as a right back and. I think it's Carlos Vinicius as a striker. I get he's a young prospect, but he's more of an FA Cup reserves type of player. He's not a player that you're gonna that's gonna lead you to a Prem title. So
300k a week for FA Cup.
I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but honestly, is he much more than that for now?
Yeah, I mean. You know, I gave Zidane a lot of stick when he wasn't playing Bale. Bale was really just exiled onto the reserves, not even on the bench. But now I guess I'm seeing. I guess I was missing something because
seeing what he saw at practice.
Physical talent. I still think Bale. Right. It's just. I think it's an attitude, a drive from the player, mm-hmm. from Bale himself. And you can't teach that. You can't teach personal drive and want to be the best. And I think he's just lost that. And again, you have Eric Lamella and Lucas Moura subbing in over you. I think it's a sign that you're just not wanted. And that's, I guess Zidane was right after all. And now Tottenham, who don't like to spend a lot of money, had to spend quite a bit of money to pay Bale's high wages. But that's just another thing I think that sums up Tottenham this season a little bit, that expectations and reality, I think, have dropped mm-hmm. quite a bit recently, especially with the City game coming up. That would be an interesting one to see. But let's shift over to second place right now. It's Manchester United, 5 points behind City. City do have a game in hand, though. It's been up and down for them. I mean, they lost to Sheffield quite astonishingly, tied Arsenal, beat Southampton 9-0, mm-hmm. which was huge. But then that Everton game, which – Ole came out and said himself after it that they're not title contenders. I mean, I don't know. Tia, is this game on David De Gea? Because he's getting a lot of criticism for that 96-minute equalizer. He didn't really put his body on the line to save it. About the first goal, he pushed it right to the middle of the box. I mean, is this what are Man U contenders or
especially over this last year? De Gea has been bouncing back, and it's good to see him. Bouncing back because he's been playing well, in my opinion, because he took a lot of heat, especially in 2018 after the World Cup. He wasn't at the top of his form, but he's still, for a lot of people, a world-class goalkeeper. And I don't think you can pin this loss on De Gea. You have to look at, first of all, Man United as a team, their mentality and their drive. Like, you can see that mentally they weren't there, especially in the last minutes. That's when you really have to have grit and just get the 3 points. So you can't really pinpoint it on De Gea, in my opinion. But, I mean, props to DCL, who has been having a pretty good season. And also props to Scott McTominay, as we're talking about Manchester United, who has 3 goals in his last 3 games, has been solid this season. Do you guys, What do you guys think about his performances? And Spencer, what do you think about this Man U game in general?
I mean, overall with the Man U game, I just don't think it was good enough. I think they going into halftime at 2-0 up against Everton, they should have been able to kill the game off. But the way they came out to start the second half was just poor. I mean, they got dominated. Everton came out and just absolutely dominated them. And I mean, I think this kind of showcases why I never thought Man United would be in the title race, because if City go into a game up 2-0, that game is done. You turn it off on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
At halftime against Everton, I was thinking, oh, if Everton get one, this can be a game.
Mm-hmm.
I think Man United are somewhat lacking that ruthless instinct. They were lucky to be up 3-2 with quite a soft goal given up by Robin Olsen, the Everton backup. But
and not the backup anymore, well, though.
Pickford's hurt.
Yeah, although, I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll get to that in a second. But Olsen's game previously was outstanding. I mean, I don't know if Pickford really has. We know we were talking about him earlier in the season. I mean, he's not looking too hot either.
That's true. But at the moment, you would still say that Pickford is the starter.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, he could have done better on two of the goals probably for United. But one definitely, the first one wasn't great either. But I think it should be better if Man United want to compete in a title race.
Yeah. No, I you know, to be honest with you, I really do think that this game did come down to De Gea. I really do. I think I agree with you, Spencer, that United did lose some of that focus, which is, you know, I don't think they're going to be a title contender. I think they'll be up there for a while, but they're not really going to challenge for the title. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why, as you say, when City get up 2-0, yeah, the game's done. But De Gea, for me, really did cause some points in this game. I mean, that first goal, I'm not sure what he's doing, just pushing it to the middle of the box like that. And the last goal, I mean, you know, you got to be willing to just jump on it. And he's on his feet out there. I just didn't get it. I didn't get it at all. It wasn't a hard chance to save. You know, and that's cost some points, and that's really unfortunate because now you have quite a gap at the top. If City win that game hand. 5 points isn't too bad, though. They beat West Ham yesterday. They looked okay in that, you know, FA Cup. Really, it's kind of the same thing every time. Whenever Bruno Fernandes comes on, Man United look great. Without him, they don't look that great. And they have West Brom next. So that should be another win for them. Looking at the table right now, right, we have the top four, top five. Who, Spencer, I'll go to you first. Who in your mind, who is there anyone really still in it?
The league is done. This,
no.
I think.
No, okay.
I think I always thought that the only team that could push City were Liverpool. And ever since January, late December, they've just looked terrible. And that City win, if they had been able to beat City, then there's a chance they could have pulled off a miracle with City having a bunch of hard games coming up after this. Maybe Liverpool would get lucky and they'd go on a poor run of form. But even then, Liverpool would essentially have to win every game left in the season, which they won't be able to do. And neither Man United nor Leicester have that capability in them. So, league's done.
I think Arsenal is still in it. But every other team, I think.
No. Arsenal going to make up the 19-point gap.
Easy, bro. Easy.
With City do have a game in hand, which could be critical.
No, they're going to lose. No, honestly, I think there's, like, some insane stat that, like, the last, I think, like, 10 or 13 games, the City have conceded, like, 3 goals or some crazy thing
Ruben
like that.
Yes.
It's insane. Like, the fact, like, John Stones,
I mean, this dude,
like, just
Ramos.
Came back out of nowhere. Ruben Diaz has been class.
Yeah.
Like, it just shows, like, when you have players like Laporte who are still world-class center backs sitting, just dying off on your bench, it shows you like the amount of quality that this team has. And I mean, honestly, I couldn't expect less from a coach that has spent €1 billion, more than that, and 400 million on a defense that is finally showing signs of life. But yeah, this sad to see, but a lot of people on the internet are saying that you can't compare Klopp and to the legends of the game like Mourinho and Guardiola, because it's one thing to win a title and it's another thing to defend one.
I mean, it's quite hard to defend one. Like, you don't have any.
You have
defenders.
No money.
You're not allowed to spend money.
Well, I mean,
Kabak.
You're one.
This is what I would say.
One,
this is what I would say on
Klopp
right now.
You have it's has Kabak. Been injured since December.
Minamino, bro.
2.8 million Ben D.
This is what I would
ben
say on Klopp right now.
Davies from Newport County is going to set the league alight.
Watch.
I got to be honest with you. I agree with you, Spencer. I don't think Pep Guardiola could have done what Klopp did coming to Liverpool. I mean, when you look at that team Klopp had when he first arrived at Liverpool, it's disgrace compared to what he has now, to be completely honest. But what I would say about Klopp right now, the season as a whole, just kind of disappointing me, is that I think he's handled this season quite badly. He's complaining about the schedule, the TV broadcasters, the injuries, the subs, the amount of subs, you know, complaining with coaches about Chris Wilder and Allardyce from, you know, from the Burnley manager, what's
Sean
his name?
Dyke.
Sean Dyche. Yesterday comes out after the City, whatever that was, Saturday, what day was that? After the City game comes out and a reporter asks him, you know, you're 10 points behind, they have a game and handed you out. He doesn't even acknowledge the reporter. He kind of trashes him, which is, I thought, was a little bit of lack of respect. I think he's really handling this bad right now. And, you know, when that rubs off on your players, mm-hmm. that rubs off on the locker room. And I really think he just needs to – I know Liverpool's chemistry as a team is very strong. I know it is. So he really needs to just take a step back and analyze this from further back, because he's – right now, I just don't think he's handling the situation very well. And that could
his
cost...
mother just passed away too, sadly. So – It's gonna be another weight on him, personally, emotionally.
Yeah. So this is a really big test for Klopp and Liverpool as a pure locker room.
But I think having a captain like Dean Henderson, really, really helps a lot.
Henderson,
like,
I also
that
think,
guy is insane.
Oh, for sure.
I also just think hopefully the weight of, I mean, I think they're clearly out of the title race. I think that some of the pressure could be lifted, and that really all they need to do in the league this year is finish fourth or better. And most Liverpool fans would be like, okay, we were missing a ton of players, still got Champions League. Let's just take this season and move on.
Yeah. I think this is also an opportunity for like young players like Curtis Jones, who against City didn't have a bad game, in my opinion. I think he's a really good young player, and he has a lot of promise, and it's going to give opportunity to these young players that usually wouldn't break into the squad and to play at a high level in the Premier League and develop.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily, though, because still need to finish top four.
But, I mean, top
that's not
four
guaranteed.
Is a lot more manageable than
it's a lot
down
less
Manchester
pressure.
Right,
City
right.
down 7 points.
It's less pressure on the youngsters.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and you know, Klopp, of course, is not going to get fired. So no one's going to blame him when Liverpool are missing their center backs and half their freaking team. No one's going to blame him for that. So he just, just needs to stay calm, cool, and collective. And they'll finish top four, I believe.
They should.
So I think we'll move on, though, from the Premier League. We'll go over to Spain. And Spain's kind of the same as where we left off, to be honest with you. Up and down performances from Madrid. Barcelona are kind of getting into some form right now. But Atletico Madrid keep winning, although Atletico Madrid did tie Celta Vigo this past match day. Madrid won yesterday 2-0 on Getafe. Okay, so I guess we'll start off with Real Madrid. Why not? Because I thought yesterday was really fun to watch because it was something different. You know, Zidane did have, along with Klopp, I guess Zidane had a little bit of a hit with reporters just a few days ago, asking for respect, you know, saying we won the league last year. I'm not leaving. I'm not on the hot seat or anything like that, which, you know, that's debatable. But he goes out against Getafe yesterday, and he actually plays a three in the back formation. When they had the ball, they were at a three in the back. Marcelo and the young kid, Marvin, young Spaniard, got his debut, which is great to see. But and they win the game pretty comfortably. You know, and Getafe is a team, to be fair, that they've scored 17 goals as a club this season. Suarez on his own has scored 16. So they didn't score that many goals, Getafe, but they're still a good team. You know, they finished, I think it was sixth place last year. One of the best coaches in Spain. So, you know, Atletico Madrid tied, Real Madrid won. Spencer, is there still, you know, a little bit of hope?
Depends which Madrid.
Nothing. Real Madrid. Or Barcelona. I mean, Barcelona right there too.
Real Atletico are 5 points, 2 games in hand. So, assuming they do their business, that's 11 points. I just don't think Madrid can be consistent enough to overcome them. I mean, even they did get 2 wins in a row, but I mean, when 3 out of the 4 goals are coming from center backs, it doesn't seem that sustainable. I don't think they'll be able
Varane's not scoring a title a weekend
until they get a marquee attacker. I mean, Benzema's sufficient for now, but he's not gonna win you a league title. And
I need a Haaland.
I still think it's done, although Barcelona are in some pretty decent form as well.
Yeah, and I think people are also sleeping on Sevilla. Yes. They're right there too, in my opinion, like along with Madrid and Barcelona. They're right there.
I mean, right there.
I mean, they're there. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're 1 point, so they are there. Like,
what do you think they're gonna do?
I think fourth place will be their finishing spot.
I don't think we can call it quits now, though. Yes. For Real Madrid and Barcelona, I think, as we've seen with Atleti before, they can go on runs where they don't manage to score, and they're just flat and not an insanely good team. So, especially with the Champions League coming back, I think we could see Atletico slip up, and I don't think it's a little too early to call it. Call it the show.
Yeah,
fair.
And let's shift over to Barcelona, who, as you say, Spencer, have caught a bit of form. Griezmann's caught a bit of form.
Finally,
you know, Griezmann, Dembele, Messi. That front three is kind of catching some fire. They play Sevilla today, 3:00. First round of the Copa del Rey. It's gonna be a great game. I mean, you know, are they? Again, I don't think they can come back and win it. But Mattia, are they, you know, what are your thoughts on Barcelona?
As you said, I think it's good to see them, like, to see the attackers getting back in form and scoring goals. But again, like the Betis game, along with the Granada game, they go to extra time. They need late goals, to come back. They barely came back. In the end, in extra time, they dominated, but that's what we expect to see from them from the get-go. They should never be 2-0 down. And Betis, they let up 2 goals too, and I think tonight will definitely be a test when they play Sevilla, and we'll definitely see. Hopefully, we see a good game, but I think their recent success shouldn't be like too exaggerated, so to say. I can't find a better word to say it. My bad.
Yeah, no, Barca are catching some fire for sure. I think it is a little bit of a battle for second place. But we'll shift over to the main team themselves. Atletico Madrid staying top of the table. Again, they tied Celta Vigo, but they've been pretty comfortable beyond that. And Spencer, let me ask you a question. Can you give me a reason why Barcelona gave Luis Suarez to Atletico Madrid, their arch rival in the league, for $6 million, basically on a free. And now Suarez has 16 goals in 17 games, top scorer in La Liga. Is there any reason, any explanation you can give me for that?
I mean, it was a terrible transfer, and it just made absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Like, I mean, I think it's Suarez who wanted out. Like, you couldn't really keep him there.
Well, I mean, he wanted out because the way, he wasn't the ownership.
Yeah, they just treated him badly.
But why? I'm confused. Like, why would you let him walk to Atletico Madrid?
Because he forced the move.
I mean, you could put in a clause, well, you can't go to somewhere else in Spain. No, but you can put in they $6 million transfer fee, so you don't have to give him to Atletico Madrid. You know, he was going to go to Juventus, and I think with his passport cheating on his passport exam, whatever that was, came up. But why would they let him go to Atletico Madrid?
I don't think so.
Is there any explanation? No. I mean, not really. You guys have one? No.
Nope.
No.
Not one.
All right. Well, that sums it up. I mean, it's kind of a rhetorical question, I guess, because it was an explanation. Atletico Madrid are flying. You know, Champions League game coming up. We'll get to the Champions League maybe later on in this episode. But, I think that does sum up La Liga. I mean, it's up and downs, really. Other than Atletico Madrid, it's just up and down from Madrid, Barcelona, Sevilla, and so on. But I think we will shift over now to Germany. And it hasn't been a whole lot in Germany. But one team I want to discuss, because it seems as if every week it's just another disappointing result, is Borussia Dortmund. They're sitting, 16 points now?
Yeah.
Behind Bayern. I mean, especially you had them to win the league. Like, what do you have to say to this
I mean, I don't know what went wrong for Dortmund this year, but I mean, they were in decent form at the start. It looked like they weren't gonna really challenge for the league title, but they were up there. But I mean, then it just kind of all fell off the rails around late November, really after the loss versus Bayern, or the annual title deciding loss versus Bayern. But I mean, it's just been bad. Yeah. The new manager has not solved any of the problems, and there's not much else to say. It's just been bad by Dortmund, with Gio Reyna being the only bright spot.
Yeah, you know, I think it's confusing because I was with you a little bit on Dortmund when we predicted it before the season started. And they kept Jadon Sancho, who I thought was going to leave. They kept him. They had Haaland. They had a good season last year. And I thought, you know, this team, there's one year that I can remember that Dortmund, I really think, can push Bayern Munich. It's going to be this year. And Mattia, that's really falling apart. I mean, what has happened to a player like Jadon Sancho, for instance? What's happened to his value?
I think when you look at it in retrospect, like the hype he was getting this summer, where we were talking like figures, insane figures, like 120 mil, 150 mil to Man United. So when you look at it now, you say, well, Dortmund was stupid not to sell. And now I don't think they'll get more than 100 million for him. And if they will, it's a good deal for Dortmund. But I think just their form is going to invite players like Haaland to make the next step in their career. And Jadon Sancho definitely has taken a hit in his market value. And it's not looking good for Dortmund
and their young stars. I mean, it is kind of confusing why they're so bad, because they have a very good roster.
And deep. I mean, like, they have,
when you look at their starting 11, even the sub, Jude Bellingham, Youssoufa Moukoko off the bench.
I mean, I feel like now, because Jude Bellingham is English, like, I think he was a little bit overrated. Like, he played 40 games in the championship, and people were talking about him being some next level thing. But honestly, is he really all that?
I mean, he's still only 18 years of age,
of course,
so you can't really
he hasn't done anything to prove to us that he's what was expected of him coming into this season, I think, with the chances he's gotten.
And I mean, Dortmund are already willing to sell him this summer, so that's
no way
not great.
Back to Birmingham.
Send him
they
out.
They retired his jersey, bro. That's so funny. That's so funny. That's sad. Yeah, that. Oh my god.
Yeah. So at the top of the table, Bayern Munich running away with it. 7 points, but I'm sure it'll finish higher than that, per usual. Lewandowski is just a machine. It's kind of hard to talk about Bayern because they seem so good. They do play in the Club World Cup final tomorrow against Tigres.
Tigres are going to win. Gignac. My boy Gignac, who choked in the Euros in 2016 when he hit the post in the last minute. He's gonna make a name for himself.
Yeah, remember.
Gotta respect him, the Frenchman.
All right, well, can't wait to see that tomorrow.
But are you guys actually gonna watch that?
Not much talk about the Bundesliga.
Like, in all seriousness, does anybody watch the Club World Cup?
I watched it last year because the Liverpool were in it.
I watched it for 3 straight years.
I feel like it's one that you watch if your team's in it, but yeah.
So I haven't watched it.
No one really cares.
Yeah,
I mean, Milan aren't really that good.
Speaking of Milan, we can move over to the Serie A.
Yeah, let's shift over.
Where Milan still sits in first place. So out of us three, my team is the only one that's doing decently this season. But
also the only one not in the CL.
Okay. Well, okay. So speaking of Milan, Zlatan scoring 2 goals in the last game. Back in form after being injured for 2 months. 2 points off second place, Inter. Inter, who actually played Juve yesterday and tied 0-0. Juve go ahead and aggregate to the final of the Coppa Italia. Tonight, there's going to be Napoli against Atalanta to decide the other finalists. But I think this year is definitely going to be a race between Milan, Inter, and Juve. The rest of the teams are letting up. Napoli is... They made a good run in the beginning of the season. They made a big signing in Osimhen, but he's had a lot of scandals. He got COVID, went to Nigeria for a wedding, got COVID there, didn't respect protocols. But, I mean, tonight, big game, Napoli-Atalanta. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think Atalanta are going to get that game. I think regardless of who goes who, Juventus are going to win the final. But I think Atalanta can get this game.
A very even game, but I'm going to go against you. I think Napoli are going to be able to top them.
Mm-hmm. And Nico, every week you talk about Milan, you always ask the same question. Is Milan in it for the long run? Are you on that bus yet?
Yeah.
Are you on the bandwagon?
Look, I wasn't on the bus before.
Bro.
I'm not going to be on the bus right now.
Okay.
It's been 20. It's been 21 games.
When they were points away.
Milan, but next Sunday, will you admit that they have a shot at the title?
No. They have a shot. They have a shot in for the.
So
for
you
the
just
lead.
Don't
they
think
do.
They're favored?
I still think they're going to finish third place. I really do. I think third place would be a good spot for them, though.
Champions League.
Right. Yeah, I don't. You know, no one was expecting them to win the league this year. Let's just be honest. CL I think third place would be a success
financially.
Well,
we don't need money. We don't need money.
Back in the Champions League.
We make good signings without money. Trust.
AC Milan need Zlatan, 38-year-old Zlatan.
Mandzukic
forever.
Mandzukic is still only 36, man.
Hey, Mandzukic, I think is a good signing.
Hasn't played
fair.
Football in 7 months though.
I thought Liverpool could use Mandzukic, but. Look, I think, you know, one person that just sticks out to me every week is CR7. Seriously, 23 goals, 23 games. The dude is just scoring. Gamboo, Inter Milan. His goal against Roma was just class.
No, his goal against Roma was pretty good.
And I really think he's just going to be –
he's
going to
take
him
where?
I really do think he's going to take him as he did last
year.
To
another quarterfinal?
To the Serie A title. to the Serie A title, I think he took him last year.
Bold prediction.
He's gonna take him again this
zero
year. He's heating up, and that's
ooh, not even Coppa Italia.
I think they're gonna get Coppa Italia.
I think Napoli are gonna do him.
Jeez, bro. I mean, they've already won a trophy, the Super Bowl.
The chances there.
Well,
look,
your take is
okay. I'm not gonna.
That's like a plastic cup. So
it's like Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
Just
out of the three main titles. Yeah.
I think they're going 0-3.
Look, I think it's like Tom Brady in Super Bowl. I mean, you can bet against him, but CR7's always going to show up. I really think so. And
the mighty Leon was too much.
But look. I think Juventus will win Serie A. They're closing the gap on AC Milan. AC Milan are having a great season. Zlatan's having a great season. I think they're going to finish third place. That's where I will predict them. I think that's a great result for them. But look, at the end of the day, Ronaldo, he's just a difference maker in this league. And he shows it basically every week this year, and I think he'll continue to. And I think they're gaining a lot of chemistry. That's what they were lacking with the new coach. Weston McKennie is playing great. He's playing great. I think Juventus is going to come back. I mean, Spencer, are you winning for AC Milan?
I said Inter at the start of the season, and I'm going to stick with that prediction.
Yo, y'all are haters, bro.
Juventus are going to win the league this year, and I don't think AC Milan are that good. So I think that only leaves Inter.
Keep hating. We feed off of it.
I think they'll finish third, though. Well, I'll give that to you. Although Roma, you never know. Lazio's in great form, too. They've won 5-6 straight games now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think that does wrap up Serie A. We'll definitely get back to that. See this weekend's game. We'll talk about AC Milan still in it after this weekend or not. Who knows? And I think, in order to wrap up the episode today, we'll shift over to some quick little transfer. Mm-hmm. Transfer news, hit some transfer news. A new one coming out recently is Varane is not going to re-sign with Real Madrid. Manu and PSG, the two front runners, which is ironic because Sergio Ramos, who has rejected two extensions now, of course, but is only offering a 1 year. Also linked with Manu and PSG. So, you know, could see PSG with Ramos
and
Varane.
I mean, to be fair, Manu and PSG are linked to everybody. Look, so.
Yeah. Madrid are linked with David Alaba as a replacement.
Isn't that confirmed?
Right. So I do think Madrid are going to bring in Alaba.
I think it's confirmed.
Fabrizio Romano, it's not confirmed. But when Fabrizio Romano confirms it for me, that's a confirmation.
Upamecano is.
I'll take the confirmation.
Upamecano
is available. So look,
$42 million, which is a massive steal.
Yep, massive steal. Look, Spencer, who needs this? Who needs – out of these three guys, you know, who needs one of them, two of them? Who needs it the most?
Out of Varane, Ramos, Upamecano.
Like Man U, PSG.
I think Ramos from Man United, I think, would be the most game-changing signing because I think they're definitely lacking a leader at the back. And when Bruno isn't on the field, they don't really have that – world-class leader. I mean, Pogba on his day is a world-class player, but he's definitely not a leader.
He has 5 days a year.
Yeah, most of them for France. Yeah. But Harry Maguire and Victor Lindelof is not a Premier League winning center back combination. And never will be. So, but I think Ramos could inspire some leadership that could take them over the line.
Yeah, I think Ramos is definitely a play. Of course, paired up with Marquinhos at PSG, I'd like to see that. Maybe if Messi, you know, heads over to PSG, that Ramos-Messi connection would be pretty fun to see, honestly, after so many years of rivalry. But I think Upamecano is definitely a player teams like, I don't know, Chelsea can be looking at. Tottenham, I think Tottenham should definitely be in the market for a center back, these types of teams, honestly. And Juve, I think Juve to pair up with De Ligt, Bonucci and Chiellini are getting on. I don't know how much longer they'll be at the top of their game. Chiellini's been good, to be honest, but those are just some teams that come off the top of my head for now.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think Ramos at some point will resign with Real Madrid. I think, you know, Paris at a certain age does only offer 1 year extensions. I think he'll cave in as an exception for Ramos at some point. Varane, I'm not so sure. He almost left, you know, I think it was 2 years ago. Who's really close to leaving. I think he'll leave. And if it's Man U or PSG, I think both teams could really use him. Man U, that'd be really interesting. Especially for 40 million, which I think is a good deal for Varane. Upamecano, I mean, yeah. Upamecano, Real Madrid, I think, should definitely go after Upamecano. I think they will get Alaba. Upamecano will be a great young center back. But I think so. You know, Man U and PSG both use him. Basically, any team, Juventus, yeah.
The only problem, I think, is great. If he goes to a team like a player like Upamecano could be beneficial to Liverpool, especially because he could start alongside Virgil. And he would start over Matip and Joe Gomez. But on that note, I think that wraps up the episode, boys. And we had a long episode today. We talked about a lot of things, a lot of big games coming up in all the leagues, a lot of close races. So be sure to tune into the next couple of episodes, and we'll see you next time.